When you're shopping for the holidays, do you look for the fair trade label? It promises that products come from farmers and workers who are justly compensated, treated ethically. But a Bloomberg News investigation found that in at least one country, the fair trade label is masking the worst labor practices imaginable. Bloomberg found children, including a girl named Clarissa, who'd been given by her aunt to a farmer, working in slave conditions in the West African country of Burkina Faso, growing and picking the cotton used in clothing sold by Victoria's Secret, which marketed items as being fair to women and children, but now is having to react to the news that they decidedly are not. Cam Simpson of Bloomberg News spent 6 weeks researching the story. It's online today. It's going to appear in an upcoming issue of Bloomberg Business Magazine, and we're going to spend some time on it with Cam, who joins us from London. Welcome.
Thanks, Robin. It's a pleasure.
Boy, this is pretty disturbing to read. This fair trade label is very important to companies like Victoria's Secret. In fact, Victoria's Secret was marketing its clothing, drawing attention to it.
It did initially, yes, and then it stopped at some point in about 2009. But the company says, you know, look, we're buying stuff that's certified as fair trade to us. They feel like they were let down, as well as consumers at the end of their chain.
Well, let's explain how it is supposed to work. First of all, who's in charge of making sure things are fair trade?
The biggest certifying organization, the biggest labeling organization, is Fair Trade International, and that's about a $6 billion a year market. The much bigger universe of ethically sourced things, sustainable things, it's vast, it's unmeasured, it's huge. I mean, Starbucks, for example, has its own standards. Any number of companies that you can name are moving into this world because they've found actually that it increases sales. There was a study earlier this year done, I think, at the London School of Economics, and they found just putting a fair trade label on a bag of coffee increased sales 10%. So this is big business, and it's big business for major corporations, and it's big business for the fair trade movement.
Well, but as you write, with a lot of money floating around now in this new fair trade market, farmers are desperate to get it. And that brings us to Burkina Faso and the fields of one cotton farmer and a little 13-year-old girl named Clarisse. Just describe her circumstances. Why was she with this farmer? How did she live? What did she do?
Yeah, Clarisse started doing this work when she was 12, actually. That was her first cotton season. And she is a foster child in a system in West Africa that's known as confiage. She's an enfant confié, as they say. It's a sort of foster child that you see across West Africa, especially in rural areas. These are kids who often are abandoned, children of unwed mothers, sometimes children of migrants, sometimes and quite often they're children who are actually sought for their labor. That's a traditional system that exists in Burkina Faso and other countries of West Africa. And what we found is when you then overlay incentives for smallholders, small farms, to make big money from fair trade products like fair trade cotton, it created an incentive for people to get into this business and, in fact, to use these kids, to use these foster children to do the work, because that's just the way that it's done in their countries.
It's almost Dickensian. Clarisse was, after her parents were divorced, she was brought by an aunt to this farmer who has children and family of his own, but he puts Clarisse in a back room. She doesn't eat with the family. It's almost this sort of sense that, well, this is what a foster child does.
It is, in fact, what a foster child does. And Clarisse herself says this is the life of a foster child. This is what it's like. You're like an orphan. And I guess the most disturbing thing about this case is that the National Farmers Union that runs this program for Victoria's Secret co-sponsored a study in 2008 that was never published that we saw, in which they found there was an average of about one of these foster children on these fair trade farms across the country, and that they were extremely vulnerable to exactly this kind of situation.
I mentioned she doesn't eat. They don't feed this little girl. What kind of work does she do?
She does some of the most difficult work that you can imagine, Robin. I mean, during the rainy season in May and June, she has to dig a plot the length of 4 football fields, 533 rows, by hand. This was a 12-year-old girl in her first season, a 13-year-old girl this year when I met her, with nothing more than her muscle and a hoe. And as you said, these farmers are so poor. You know, even in really poor countries, this is work that's done by a beast of burden and a plow. But they're not even there yet. They have no tools other than the hoe that's made by the local craftsman. And so Therese has to dig those fields by hand. It's really extraordinary. And the work goes on for 6-7 months all the way through the harvest. And I was there for the harvest and witnessed her harvesting and the heavy work of the harvest for the first week of it last month in November. 12 hours a day. I mean, we waited outside her hut. We were there at 5:39 a.m. on the first day of the harvest. We were at her hut in the moonlight after the sun had already gone down, you know, more than 12 hours later, and she had just finished working. She had just drawn water from the well for the hut where she lives.
Balancing baskets of picked cotton on her head to carry it for miles, taking the bollworm, pulling the scourge of the crop out of the cotton, because this is, remember, organic, right? So it's harder work.
Yeah, that was one of the ironies that we found. And you know, when you say that she carried a basket, let me just describe this for you. It was three times the volume of a bushel. It's like a treble-sized bushel. It's enormous. And she had to carry it about a mile down the road on her head twice to store in a house that's literally across the street from the school that she was pulled out of by the farmer. I mean, it's extraordinary. And the burden of that, the literal burden of that, was just unbelievable to watch. But as you mentioned, I think people don't realize, well, it's organic and that's good. And proponents of organic cotton will tell you that there's so much child labor and even child trafficking in conventional cotton in Burkina Faso and places like Burkina Faso. At least with organic cotton, kids aren't exposed to chemicals, to pesticides, herbicides, to fertilizers, insecticides. That's true, but There's a burden that comes with organic as well, and that's digging weeds out by hand, cutting the fields cover over with grasses and weeds quickly after the planting. And Clarice has to do the hard digging that she does at the beginning of the season all over again to get rid of the weeds. And she literally has to work her way through the fields looking for bollworms, pulling them out and throwing them down on the ground and smashing them. She told me that they can be as big as her forefinger. So there's hauling manure compost on her head and making a giant pile in the field and then having to spread it on each and every one of the thousands of plants. It's organic, it's pure, but that comes with a price for Clarice and kids like her.
Bloomberg News reporter Cam Simpson, whose just released story exposes how children in Burkina Faso are virtually slaves in the farming of fair trade organic cotton, cotton that ends up in goods sold by Victoria's Secret. Cam tells the story of 13-year-old Clarice, who does 12 hours of backbreaking hard manual labor every day during the cotton harvest, often with no food. And Cam, you mentioned a 2008 report by Burkina Faso's Fair Trade Program, which partners with Victoria's Secret. That report found that there could be thousands of foster children like Clarice in Burkina Faso. Now, the report wasn't disseminated, but it also said that farmers receive training so they don't use child labor. Explain this disconnect here, because you spoke with the president of the Organic and Fair Trade Co-op in one village. He told you he thought it was okay to use foster children in the field, just not his own biological children.
Yeah, no, he did. And it wasn't just him, Robin. I mean, across the Southwest, where the fostering phenomenon was the most acute and where there was a huge disconnect between foster children of these farmers who were out of school and the farmers' own children who were in school, which is a really good indicator of the vulnerability of these children. It was an inverse proportion.
His understanding was that it's acceptable to use children in the fields on two conditions: they're not your own biological children and they're at least 6 years old. So they felt that by meeting that, they were doing the right thing.
I was so taken aback by that. I mean, we asked him to repeat it in his native language twice, just to be certain that, in fact, wow, 6 years old. It was really very stunning.
Well, meanwhile, we're all thinking about Clarice. How is it that the farmer that she worked for let you be there with her and see how she worked, and what's happened to her?
First off, I mean, the farmers are, by and large, I think the study had about 71% of them. These are peasant farmers. They're not literate. And they have no sense that they're doing anything wrong, and they haven't been told that they're doing anything wrong. And culturally, this is the way that it is in their communities. And we were able to simply, you know, go in and say, look, we're interested in the situation of foster children who work in organic cotton, and will you let us into your world? Several times, her farmer, a man named Victorian Kambule, who is a cousin of hers, he was frustrated with us and a bit suspicious. But, you know, we were able to just stay in her life and stay in his life. We made two different trips just to this village over the course of a couple months and just spent a ton of time there so we could understand what was going on. But I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, they don't believe that they're doing anything wrong. No one has told them that they're doing anything wrong.
So what's going to happen to Clarice?
Well, that's a really good question, and I wish I knew what's going to happen to Clarice. I don't know what's going to happen to Clarice. You know, I fear that the reaction to the story by the angry farmers union and the government of Burkina Faso is quite angry as well that we did this story. I fear that they're going to go, and any farmer who was named in our story is going to be cut out, even though, in my mind, they were breaking rules that they didn't know existed. And that means they're not going to sell their crop, and then, you know, Clarice isn't going to eat again, and neither are their own kids, and neither are they. So, you know, what happens next? That's a great question. I wish I knew. We have very good people that we keep in touch with who are all around this village, and we'll see what happens.
Maybe someone will come and scoop her up. But meanwhile, what are we to take away from this, Cam Simpson? What about the chocolate, the coffee, all the other things that say they're fair trade? Are they?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question, Robin. I mean, you know, the BBC has done some extraordinary work over the last couple of years, their own investigative journalism into the cocoa fields in West Africa, and they have found thousands of kids working in these fields. It's a long-standing problem. Fair Trade will tell you, Fair Trade International, hey, we don't make any guarantees. We don't guarantee that stuff is child labor-free or exploitation-free. Yet when you read their position papers on child labor, it's clear that they know that's what customers expect, that there is no exploitation. So Fair Trade International instituted some changes and some reforms that they said were aimed at improving that situation. One of the things that they did was they said that they were going to start doing some surprise visits, surprise inspections, essentially, to hotspots where child labor is endemic. So, for example, cotton in West Africa, everyone knows there's child trafficking involved, there's child labor involved. You know, they would not tell me whether they had ever done any surprise inspections there. They did tell me that the people who run the program and get certification from them did not tell them about these at-risk children.
Well, perhaps I just wonder if one of the takeaways from this is that while there are these, you know, national federations like the one in Burkina, the Federation of Cotton Producers, that are responsible for running the organic and fair trade program across the country, maybe it'll be a little more incumbent on these huge international corporations, Victoria's Secret, to pump up their oversight. They should be the ones making the surprise visits since they're making the money.
That's a good question. And this deal in Burkina Faso, the company people who have been promoting it have said publicly that this is a revolutionary deal because the company is going straight into Burkina Faso and dealing directly with the organization that represents the farmers, not going through brokers, cutting out the middlemen. Then that does beg the question that you just asked. Does the closeness of that relationship have any meaning when it comes to scrutiny? So we're going to find out. We're going to find out what's going to happen next.
And what has Victoria's Secret said in response to the report? What are they going to do?
Well, they say that they're going to investigate. They say they take these allegations very seriously. They say that they relied on the fair trade certification. I mean, I think, you know, Victoria's Secret and Limited Brands, which is the parent company, they have not promoted this. They don't wave this around on their website. They
anymore.
Haven't really anymore. That's true. But, I mean, I think that they got into this for the right reasons. I mean, that's just my impression from the work I've done on this. But, you know, it is definitely a cautionary tale. What they do next will be interesting and we'll be watching.
Well, one thing they might want to consider is going to find Clarice.
Yeah.
Cam Simpson of Bloomberg News. They have an amazing multimedia site with videos and pictures of the cotton trade in Burkina Faso online. We'll link you at hereandnow.org. And in addition to the online, which comes on today, the print story comes out in a couple of weeks in the February issue. Cam Simpson, thanks so much.
Thank you, Robin. It's been a pleasure.